Welcome to PCB Chat. I'm your host, Mike Buto. Today's podcast is sponsored by PCB Today, bringing two-day workshops on design and manufacturing to your door. Coming in June to Austin, Texas, Design Essentials for PCB Engineers, and the SMT Assembly Bootcamp. Visit PCB2day.com for information. Surma Technology is one of India's largest domestically based EMS companies. Its chief executive, Sriram Srinivasan, was educated in both India and the United States, returning to India after research stints in Los Alamos and Oak Ridge National Labs. There, he has held a variety of management jobs in the automotive and industrial sectors. He became CEO of Surma in 2015. Sriram, welcome to PCB Chat.
Thank you.
You joined Surma about 4.5 years ago. What was it about the company that attracted you?
Firstly, it was in a completely new domain, which was very attractive because I could see that electronics hardware manufacturing was starting to come up. It was like the newest sunrise industry in India at that point in time. And so I saw the opportunity. And when the call came, I was positive that I would move to Surma. The second is there was a great opportunity to also turn it around and take it to the next level. So that also attracted me to Surma. And then when I spent a couple of weeks with Surma as a consultant to begin my career here, I really liked the kind of people that were working for Surma. Some of them have been with the Tandon Group for more than 20 years. So that was also something that got me to sign up at Surma.
We'll talk about the Tandon Group a little bit more in a moment, but let's focus on Surma. You've been growing fairly rapidly with the addition of multiple plants in the past 5 years.
That's right.
What are your key end markets and where do you hope to expand?
We build RFID tags, which is about half our business. And then the other half is magnetic coils and also boards and boxes, PCB assemblies, for a wide variety of industrial, healthcare, and other domains. So in RFID, which is really one of our strengths, we build as much as 3 million tags every week and deliver them to different global customers. And that's one of the main areas that we sell our tags to is industrial IoT and consumer electronics for authentication or for asset tracking kind of applications.
Where are your key end markets? Are they domestic or are they as much of it overseas at this point?
Today, Surma is about 85% exports out of India, mostly to Europe, to the U.S., and a little bit to Southeast Asia. The remaining 15% is domestic, and that's going to slowly change because as the Indian market starts to pick up, we expect that the ratio would be more 70 to 30%. 70% still being exports, which is our strength, and then 30% would be domestic. And then if the domestic market grows even faster than we anticipate, it could even be 60-40. But at any given point, I think I don't see the ratio going beyond 60% export and 40% domestic. So that's the healthy ratio that we would like to maintain.
What are some of the factors that go into the decision as to where to locate a factory? And have you started to consider placing factories outside of India?
Honestly, a couple of years back, we were looking out for factories even in the U.S. and Europe. We thought that's the way to go, So, but we have had a rethink. We think that staying close to home or staying at home is a good idea for now, and because the Indian market is starting to grow very fast, but also it makes a lot of sense to make in India and sell to the global markets. So we decided to stay home, but we haven't completely negated this idea of setting up a plant eventually in the U.S. or in Europe. If there is a clear advantage for us, we are completely open to that idea, but maybe not at this time because we're just coming out of a large expansion in our number of factories. But when the right one comes along, maybe we'll be open to that idea.
And let's talk a little bit about what Sterma's capabilities are. Are you mostly a turnkey operation, or do you do a lot of consignment at this point?
We insist, and at this point, we almost are more than 95% turnkey. We try to stay out of the consignment model as much as possible, and even if we have to start with the consignment model to enter a customer, we quickly ask him to get us back into a turnkey model, because we've been in the business as a Standen Group for more than 40 years. So we have built a very healthy supply chain partners and relationships across the globe. For instance, we have supply chain partners which are over 120 and in more than 12 countries. So we've built up that relationship, and also we have kind of nurtured that relationship by absolutely paying on time and keeping our promises, being a reliable partner to our supply chain partners. So as a result, we love to be a turnkey kind of MS rather than a consignment model.
And do you offer design services?
Yeah. So one thing that we have done in the past 3 years is not only offer just box builds and board builds and other EMS offerings like manufacturing of tags or coils, is that we have started strengthening our design services. So several projects are running as of now with overseas customers mostly, where we do what we call co-creation. So customer could walk in with just an idea or a concept of a product, and we would help him convert that or package that into a product, including industrial design. So we have more than 27 engineers working in our design and engineering center, and we are enhancing that to more than 50 by end of this year, and then maybe 100 people next year. So design services is part of what we do now in the last 2 to 3 years. And then on top of that, we also have something called prototyping services. We call it ZAC. It's called ZAC because it stands for Zone for Autonomous Creation. You know, we help design companies make parts, small numbers. You know, it could be as low as 5 boards, 5 pieces of a product to 20, even up to 100. We offer them prototyping services. You know, so we turn this around in 4 to 6 weeks. We quickly order out components, and then we have a dedicated SMT line and a wave line, and also a manual insertion line to give them that service. And this ZAC is, as I said, it's a dedicated line. It's located not even in the regular EMS setup. It's located in a different building, and it has a dedicated team of its own, and it reports into business development and sales and marketing rather than operations. So we offer prototyping services in addition to design services, and also we are also offering repair and rework services since last 2 years, which means anyone could have made those boards. We would go into a customer and say, look, we can repair those boards for you, or we can rework them for you. And we can even suggest how you redesign it so that you prevent future failures of these boards or these boxes. So those are services that we are offering. And then the most recent one is tester development services. We have we realized as we went along that we had strong strengths in making testers. And so we were making it for in-house consumption, captive consumption. But now we are out there in the market telling people that we could build testers for them. You know, if they gave us the broad criteria of what they wanted, we could build the fairly large testers for them, you know, multiple racks, multiple testing protocols, and then we could build it in with the firmware and the hardware and the software, everything put together, and very cost-effectively as well. So those are the other services we offer in addition to manufacturing.
And I know you have representation in most of the other major regions as well, in the U.S. and Europe.
That's right.
Now, most EMS companies in the West are standalone entities, and that's not always the case in Eastern Asia and India. I know there are companies like IMI, Calcomp, that are part of much larger conglomerates. And in Surma's case, I think that's the same.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about the Tandon Group. Are they an active owner, or do they leave the subsidiaries to themselves?
I would say they are fairly hands-on owners, but the CEO basically has to carry the trust, which means they give him a lot of width to operate, but there's very active, very strong reviews every month to check what he's up to and if the direction is right. And then, so the direction setting is coming from the group, but day-to-day operations is all with the CEO. So that's how it operates.
Now, you mentioned that you have over 100 supply chain partners across a number of different countries.
Right.
What is the supply chain infrastructure like in India? Are you able to source much of the bill of materials locally?
No, that's the unfortunate truth. The components and infrastructure or the components ecosystem simply doesn't exist in India, except for some bare boards manufacturing by a few people. I think all the other components basically have to be imported either from China or Taiwan. And so we have, or Malaysia, or sometimes Europe and US. So we have people consolidating for us in Hong Kong, in Taiwan, in Singapore, and our own office in US helps us buy stuff. The kind of catch of doing electronic hardware manufacturing in India. But having said that, I think India is starting to realize that we need to attract a lot more components manufacturers to India and help them set up a base. And that's, I think, a recent insight that the government had. And then I think we are encouraging a lot of these Chinese and Taiwanese companies to set up shop. I would say it would take 5 years to really create an ecosystem. But as of today, it's all coming from overseas.
I want to follow that thread for a moment. India reminds me a bit of China when I first started going to Shanghai, I think was in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very exciting to see the, you know, how that country changed over the, you know, the past 20 plus years. India, to me, holds a lot of the same opportunities. It's a large population. It's well-educated. It's growing very quickly. There have been many reports, and one of the reasons I was eager to have you on this podcast was I don't get a whole lot of good information coming out of India. So there have been many reports about India's changing industrial policies and its strategies for growing its domestic manufacturing base into an export powerhouse. One of the common observations is that India's trade policy is difficult for companies to navigate, meaning there's lots of paperwork, it can be unpredictable, there's high import taxes. How would you characterize that business environment today?
It's not the easiest place to do business. I mean, having said that, things are becoming easier every day, you know, because there's great realization from both the industry bodies and the government that we've not been like the easiest place to do business. So they're trying to make it easier and easier. When I say that, I'm actually sitting inside what is called an export processing zone or a special economic zone, and where there is, you know, I can import stuff duty-free, you know, DHL or FedEx can deliver stuff, or, you know, door deliver stuff to me. You know, I need a component, I can just get it in with bare minimum paperwork, you know, and almost no custom checks. And then if I have to convert that into a product and then export it back to any country, I do it with very minimum paperwork. So it's real ease of business. You can see in action when I sit in a special economic zone, like I one part of Surma does. There are zones like that, islands of excellence, which make life very easy for people to come and invest in India. I think in 2017 we also had the complete revamp of the tax structure. We went for a complete goods and services tax, which is like a value-added tax with netting off. what you've already paid. So that actually made life easier for everyone. You file all your returns online. So India is working very hard to make it easier and easier for people to do business. And I think it's no surprise that being ranked 170 a few years back in ease of doing business, I think we are in the double digits now. I think we are in 65 or 70. So, and that's going to change. That's going to change and become better and better. And if you're in the domestic tariff area, as our Delhi plant is, you would have to do some amount of paperwork, which means you would have to, when you bring stuff in, you would have to pay the duties because you're bringing stuff from overseas to India. But having said that, I think 75 to 80% of the components don't have any input taxes or incoming import taxes. That's a special concession we have for electronics. And then you export pretty much duty-free with very little documentation. And it's all set documentation. There's no surprises. But if you want to sell in the local market, then you pay value-added taxes and then you sell in the local market. So that way, I think and that's one reason why we decided to set up our plant in 2018, because suddenly the tax structures eased up. There was one nation, one tax, and one way of paying tax, which was all online. So it became much easier to have a setup in the domestic tariff area, in addition to having one in the special economic zone. So as you can very well imagine, we do all our exports business from the special economic zone, where it makes eminent sense to do so. And then we make all the domestic business and supply to our domestic customers from our domestic tariff area plant, which is in Delhi. So that way, we have the best of both worlds.
What is the employment situation like? And to draw a comparison, in the U.S., with the unemployment rate at about 3.5%, companies are often in the position of having to really scour for qualified employees, and that's exacerbated by manufacturing in the U.S. is seen in some quarters as being a second-rate job. People coming out of college want to go into services, they want to go into software. Can you draw a comparison to what the situation is like in India today?
Yeah, unemployment is still, 7.5 to 8% in India. I think it's been at the highest level ever since, and that's only because software jobs are not growing for a long time. They had fantastic growth for more than 20, 25 years, and then they've stopped to grow. It doesn't mean that, but they need less and less people because they're kind of going up to value-added services, etc. So having said that, I think the good thing in all this is more and more kids coming out of engineering schools want to join what they call the core areas, which means manufacturing. So manufacturing is still a very attractive job, a lot of prestige associated with manufacturing jobs still in India. So we probably have more people wanting jobs than we have jobs for. I think the employability of kids coming out of engineering schools today in India is probably just about the low 20%. So which means it's not that they don't have the technical skills, but they lack the soft skills. So we do, and each company has its own kind of model, but we do a lot of soft skills training to our people, and also a lot of hands-on training, which they lack. And you have to, so they're not ready to use. You at least have to give them a basic rudimentary training for at least a couple of weeks, then keep them below somebody who knows the job to teach them the job for at least another couple of weeks, and then they're ready to go, good to go after a month under a little bit of supervision. I think we don't have a problem on the supply side, though. There's enough and more supplies of good talent, trainable talent, I would say. May not be ready to go, but at least in the very least about a month's training in soft skills and other industrial practice, and they're good to go at least for the basic jobs. and other jobs which require a lot more talent and skills, of course, we have to go and find those talents from other companies, you know. So there is a lot of movement going on of people, you know, talented people between companies. And that's a fact of life, and that's the reality in India. It would be very normal to see a very highly talented guy going through at least a job every 3 to 4 years, you know, jumping jobs every 3 to 4 years.
Well, I think if you go to the Silicon Valley in particular, and here in New England where I'm located, that sounds very familiar, quite frankly. So let's talk about the type of customer that you prefer to engage with. Would you start with that customer at the MPI stage, or do you see many people coming in directly to volume and then you end up working with them on MPI down the road?
No, Sirma has always focused on high mix, flexible volume. So we wouldn't say no to a high volume, but we are really focused with customers who have, you know, where we can put in a lot of knowledge and expertise into the product. So we can build knowledge into the product. So those are the kind of products, those are the kind of companies, customers that we kind of seek out and go after. Sometimes the volume doesn't matter, but then the engineering content that we can build into the product matters. And that's how we have been going looking for focus domains and also focus customers in those domains. So that's been our approach all this while. You know, having said that, we have seen that some of these customers end up becoming very, very large and grow with us. And we have allowed them to grow. And at that point in time, what we do is we kind of spin it off into a separate plant or a separate dedicated line so that we can just keep doing the high volume production for them, you know, while continuing to give them engineering expertise and help on engineering changes. And then we continue to look for other customers who need our help in building engineering content into their products. So that's the most exciting stuff for us, you know. Whereas if it's a product that's been running for many, many years somewhere else and somebody wants to just bring it in and put it just because he wants to save money and you know, we wouldn't say no to it if it's a pedigree customer, and you know, but normally we try to see if there is something that we could add as a value add to that product before we take it off.
Are startup companies a good fit for you? Meaning companies that perhaps haven't even brought product to market yet?
Yeah. See, I also mentioned to you the prototyping line, the whole philosophy of setting up that dedicated line and investing in a line like that and having it report directly into sales and marketing was exactly that. So not only Indian startups, but also global startups, we wanted to engage by both offering them, you know, design services or DFM services and also help them make these first off prototypes. So that's why I mentioned, you know, even if they wanted five pieces, five boards, we would quickly turn it around for them in 4 to 6 weeks and also give them free help in terms of, you know, where they could change their design or tweak their design, improve their design. So they would get free help as well from us. And also, what they also get is our contacts in the supply chain networks, and we could tell them the right product, right components to put into their product. Because some could be going end of life very soon and they wouldn't know about it, but we would know about it. So that kind of free advice also they get. But the whole idea of the prototyping, the ZAC, which is the prototyping services line, was to kind of find good startups to work with, grow them or grow along with them.
Offering that type of engineering help, especially if you're giving that engineering help away, is a big deal, because a lot of startups, in my experience, have ideas for products but don't really know how to manufacture it or even design it in a cost-effective manner. It sounds to me like that's really part of Sirma's value proposition.
Absolutely. That's the idea.
Have you been impacted at all by the coronavirus?
A little bit. I still do not know if the later part of March we would still be as chirpy as I am now, but I think the Chinese New Year, we stocked up a lot of components from China. That kind of kept us going till last week. Thankfully, Shenzhen's opened up since 17th of Feb. And many of our supply chain partners are back in action almost at 80% levels. We have so far, you know, we are not seeing a big crisis, but we still have to follow it more closely than we would otherwise. But so far, touch wood, no big impact, it looks like.
Sriram, if you want to leave our listeners with a thought about Surma, what would that be?
The one thought that I would like to leave them with is, here is a company that will help you add intelligence to products. So come to us when you have such projects, such ideas, and you want somebody to add intelligence to your products, and we will help you get there. And we'll be a reliable partner. We could be, we'll be open, transparent with you. And we would also be lean and efficient in doing all that.
And where would our listeners learn more about Surma?
We have a website. It's called www.surmatech.com or surma.com. So both these websites, you can go in there. And then there's a lot of stuff, blogs, case studies, and our corporate deck. All of it you'll find in the website. And then we could also set you up with a lot of tools that we have, a toolkit there, and you could find all the information you're looking for. And then you also have the contact details, so you could just send us an email at info@surma.com, and then we would get back to you. I think that's watched 24/7 because we have our own people sitting in the U.S. watching it at night, and then during the day we have people in India watching it. So we will get back to you within 24 hours.
And for our listeners, Surma is spelled S-Y-R-M-A.
Yeah, Surma stands for the Greek word for coils or wire. That's how Surma started. We were actually winding wire and making magnetic coils. So Surma is the Greek word for coils.
I had no idea. Thank you.
So I think your listeners should know that.
I want to thank our guest, Sriram Srinivasan of Surma Technology. And a reminder that today's podcast has been sponsored by PCB Today, bringing two-day workshops on design and manufacturing to your door. Coming in June to Austin, Texas, Design Essentials for PCB Engineers and the SMT Assembly Bootcamp. Visit PCBtoday.com for more information. For PCB Chat, this is Mike Buto. Have a nice day.